This program is designed to provide general information with regards to the subject matters covered. This information is given with the understanding that neither the hosts, guests, sponsors, or station are engaged in rendering any specific and personal, medical, financial, legal, counseling, professional service, or any advice. You should seek the services of competent professionals before applying or trying any suggested ideas.
Woodbury Reports with your host, Lon Woodbury, talking with leading professionals about how parents and others can help their struggling teens, preteens, and young adults. Now here's your host, Lon Woodbury.
Welcome back to the Woodbury Report. I'm Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho. Here's where we talk to knowledgeable people about all things involved with struggling young people and the programs and people that try to help them. Today we're going to talk about transitions, and specifically the transitions of a special needs student transitioning into adulthood and independent living. And the guest, I have Linda Rogan here. Linda, well, good afternoon. Glad to have you here.
Well, thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Okay, well, Linda is the Director of Programs and Services at Vista Vocational and Life Skills Center in Connecticut. And for those that are listening live, if you look on the lower right-hand side of the webpage, there's a chat room where if you have a question or want to make a comment, you're more than welcome, and we'll try to answer them as we go. So, Linda, we're talking about From Special Needs to Independent Living is the title that I did put out together on this. And let's start with just a basic, applies to most everybody. What are the key elements of transition from school, that's high school, college, whatever, to adult life? What are some of the big key elements?
Well, you know, the biggest thing you're trying to attain is more and more independence. And so you're moving from kind of where someone or someone else is kind of has the reins, and when you're transitioning, you're really transitioning into adult life where you're the one that's holding the reins. And you know, for everybody, that is a it's a journey that's filled with growth and struggle for all of us. We've all been through it, and for the individuals who we love and support who have other struggles or additional, I call it bricks they carry up the mountain. That transition can be more complicated, it can take longer, and it can have a lot of extra components to it that maybe those who don't have that, those special needs, have to face. And so, you know, many people, college dormitories are often the first place where there's this greater independence, and adults with disabilities, and I particularly work with young adults with neurologically based disabilities. Probably half of the people that I've spent my career working with are people on the autism spectrum, but it's a lot of others who also face, you know, needing a real more specialized transitional programming.
Okay, well, now I think if you take back any one of us, any one of the listeners, anybody listening to this, go back to when they were in their teens and young adults, and they remember the transition of going, and it's going to be a confusing, difficult time. You make some mistakes and all of that. So what are some of the additional obstacles that a special needs student need to overcome in order to gain independent living?
Well, some of it has to do with their I would put it into kind of four categories. Some of it's just the plain old acquisition of adult skills, you know, and that is all, you know, the activities of daily living, you know, all those things that you have to learn how to manage, managing your time, managing your money, managing your food, managing your health care, transportation, you know, getting appointments, keeping appointments, doing all those kinds of things. All the, you know, many of the families whose sons or daughters come to Vista will always laugh and say, oh, wow, all my kids need this. You know, all of my kids need this opportunity to be taught really some of the skills you actually have to learn in terms of being able to live more independently. There's all the things that that people have to learn in terms of either employment or post-secondary education. We particularly work with people on employment because being able to get and keep a job is integral for anyone in adult life, and that's a, you know, it's a significant way to belong and be important in our society. And so being able to have kind of be guided through the steps of developing a career and getting a job and keeping a job is a really important one. Or for people that are going on to education, post-secondary education, in terms of even how you do all that.
Let me add in one thing here, because I think on a special needs, part of the obstacle is some things they just don't get, like, say, on the spectrum. Oftentimes, they'll have social problems. They just don't get nonverbal clues, and so they need to be trained and worked on that, whereas most kids, the neurotypical kid, will do just fine, just pick it up and do just fine. Right. So that's what I had in mind, the additional obstacles that a special needs student has, is that they've got to overcome some sort of deficits or something they just don't get very easily.
Right. Well, they have to learn, you know, it's what they call that hidden curriculum. So what does that mean when a person says that, and how, you know, far do you stand away, and how many times do you call if you're, you know, trying to get information, and how, I mean, all those kinds of things have to be, we call it, you have to live it to learn it. And so that there is the situations in terms of what you're, with a survival of this population, you know, what we call it's kind of the other, one of the other kind of areas has to do with self-determination. And that is really understanding yourself and your strengths and your needs and your values and your dreams, and advocating for yourself, and also being able to kind of learn, you know, what it means when somebody does this, or what this looks like, or, you know, how is it that you kind of understand the all those people that are around you, and how to interact with it, and how to be able to, you know, how to ask a person out on a date. How to be able to, you know, understand what they're saying back. How to be able to, you know, be able to think about somebody else instead of yourself. So self-determination, all those things about self-determination, and then social opportunities. So people need, you know, a huge theme in transition, and it's part of what you were talking about, is really social opportunities, because they need to develop friends and belong, you know, be involved in the community and have meaningful relationships, and again, and have the opportunity and the training. You know, what I've always just described is that what happens is that for adults with special needs, there, you know, it's you finish high school, and often there is just this expectation that your education is over. And there's still a lot to learn. And if what people can access is, in this transition process, somebody who is teaching them and being able to process with them what they're experiencing and what it means and how they can do it differently, it's a really important part of transition to be able to have that be a learning opportunity.
Let me interject here. The way I sometimes explain it when I'm talking to people, and it's something that's at least meaningful to me, is I have what's called color weakness or color blindness. And so when it comes to, say, picking out coordinating colors or coordinating styles, I have a problem. But I watch and see, this is okay, these combinations are okay, so I memorize that. And and I've blurred that over the years to where I can't look and see actually what the color combinations go, but I've been told. And so instead of naturally doing it like the typical person is, you have to memorize it. And that's me. And I sort of do the parallel with somebody. You don't stand too close to somebody when you're talking to them. That's something they have to learn because it just doesn't come naturally. And any number of other things. And so when we talk about special needs, let's define that a little bit. I think you mentioned on the spectrum kid, on the autistic spectrum. What are some of the others that you've worked with at the program? Like you have a question here. Do you have a program that helps teach these changes? And that's your program, the VISTA Vocational and Life Skills content. We'll talk more about that later. But what kind of kids do you have in mind when you talk about special needs? Because it can be everything from poverty to attitude to spectrum to various diagnoses.
Right. And so we're when I'm talking about it in terms of the individuals that we support that really, you know, have when they can live it and learn it and do well with that kind of experiential learning and very holistic learning is the group on the autism spectrum. It's the group with seizure disorders. It's the group with Down syndrome. It's the group with some intellectual disabilities. It's the group with, acquired brain injury. It's the group with, learning disabilities. And, you know, we work with a lot of people who have struggled with some depression and anxiety or, other kinds of mental health difficulties that people struggle with and kind of have to have this opportunity to be taught versus pick it up just kind of by osmosis, which is what many people do. And you know what, I was also going to say that part of the transition process for anyone who's going through transition of this population that I'm talking about has to do really with starting to see themselves as adults and capable of being able to step into adult life and their families really being able to, willing to develop a new relationship with them as an adult and let them start to experience what the rest of us do to learn, which includes maybe making some mistakes and having the opportunity to, choose their own, boyfriend or girlfriend and figure out if that works or it doesn't work, or to get off on the wrong bus and have to find their way back. And those
Okay, let me. We've got a question here that sort of leads to that, and it sounds like somebody that's resonating with the question, and maybe is for personal use. How do you get through to the kids when they learn differently? Sounds like somebody's had a little bit of frustration communicating with them, some parent. So can you give some advice of how you get through to these kids?
Well, here's how we get through to them is that we listen to them. And that is probably the most important thing that we do is we figure out what's happening for them. And so if someone, let me just give you an example. So there was a young man and he was enraged because there was some kind of rule that he didn't want to follow. And who made that rule? And I'm going to go talk to that, that person, and there's nobody that's going to make me do this. And kind of approached, and of course everybody said, well, Linda made that rule, so go talk to her. And when he came at me with that, I just said, help me understand what's happening for you. And what he was able to do is to say what it was about that was so worrisome or frightening, and then I could help him kind of figure out what we could do to solve the problem. And so I think one of the most important things that I found in terms of getting through to someone is first to listen really carefully, really listen carefully, and then be able to help that person identify what is it that doesn't make sense or is getting in their way, and then help them feel like somebody's on their side and cares, but really listen, and then get to often to what's underneath. And that doesn't play out the first time or the second time or the third time necessarily, but I think listening is probably the most successful thing I do in getting through to people. It's building a relationship.
I think that maybe answers the next question too that the person has. So no child is the same. So how do you know the best way to reach the desired levels with different needs people? Sounds like you've just already answered that.
Yeah,
you listen to the individual.
I get to know them. I listen to them, and it is really—it's just remarkable what if you really want to understand the perspective, really want to understand it, that it just it often takes listening. There was a young man not too long ago, and he kept going into our basement and getting into all the food stores in the basement, and that's a problem in terms of the food stores are going, and he's in the basement, and he shouldn't be in the basement. And instead of, reading him the Riot Act about, of course, which lots of people had already done about, he shouldn't be in the basement, I just said, it makes me sad to think about you being in the basement kind of trying to suck all this pudding out of a can. It just makes me sad to think about you being there and what that must be like for you, and help me understand. And boy, did I get an understanding about what was happening for him and why, and then what we could do to be able to help him so he didn't have to break into the basement and, suck the pudding out of the can. And it is, and there's so much, everybody is so different, and what drives them is so different. It's to not bring your assumptions. You just have to, our assumptions are our lens, it's our way of seeing the world, and our lens is not their lens. And so it's again, really, really not again bringing our assumptions about why somebody is doing something or what it meant or what happened, and that's how I understand different people, because we have a hugely wide range of individuals that we support.
Oh, yeah, well, that's and the next question they have, and maybe you can address this. The question is, how long of a research study did this take to learn? And I think maybe, what's the research that has informed the program that you particularly use, what you have at Vista Vocational?
Well, I think, ours is, besides the, how you learn things, and almost everybody will tell you from the researchers, you learn things by taking in the information and by practicing it and by having a response and practicing it a different way, all those kinds of things, and so you have to be able to, tell somebody or then demonstrate it, not just listen to it. But what happens is it's our program is built very much on a counseling-based model. So that doesn't mean it's not necessarily therapy, because we're not trained therapists, but it is how is it that you best, and the literature will show this, how is it you best help anybody with any kind of behavior change? And that is being listening to them and then helping people find small steps. And I think if any of us think about anybody who's ever been helpful to us, I know for me, it's certainly if I look at anybody who's ever wanted to provide services to help me, what they had to do was listen to me, they had to understand, and then they had to be willing to help me find small steps to be able to take.
I think one of the things when you're talking about listening and the importance of listening is you're building a relationship. And if they feel
absolutely
like they can trust
absolutely
you and you have a relationship through the listening,
right,
then you can get through to them.
Right, right. Because what happens is when somebody feels liked and understood and supported, they're much more willing to listen to you. And if you don't get in power struggles, because anybody in pain wants to give you their, wants to get you to, have some tussle with them about something so it isn't about them. It's, becomes embedded in the tussle and how to stay out of that power struggle. And it is, the relationship is, absolutely the most important thing we've found that would help people be able to make behavior change. What they tell us, so when we ask, because we're asking them all the time, what has helped and what hasn't helped, what are the things we've taught you that have been most helpful? And what they will all say is the most important thing that we teach them are coping skills. And so that's another huge part that individuals who are transitioning I think what happens is when you're younger, you know, everybody's working really hard to make it all work for you. And, you know, they're trying to make the environment all work and make changes not happen and, you know, have it all so that the stressors aren't there for the individual. But when you're transitioning, people have to learn how to cope with things that the world brings them, because it's going to bring it to them. And almost everybody will say, the most important thing I learned is how to manage when things happen differently than what I expected, or how to be able to wait, or how to be able to do whatever the thing was that kind of, you know, got thrown in their way. How is it to cope with things?
That reminds me of a saying. Somebody said, the problem with the world is it's so darn daily. And that's what you work with, how to get through these little daily frustrations and cope
Absolutely.
With them, I think, saying.
Absolutely. And some of it is you normalize it. Yes, you're right. And those things are hard, and those things, and you can do it, and here's how you can be able to do it. You're right. The world throws things at you all the time.
Okay, there's another series of questions here. I'm going from the chat. Got some active listeners here. And it's a series of questions. Do you offer these programs out of this country? Do you teach others to run your program in different places? Are there different programs for different needs? And I think the assumption almost is that you're the only one that works with these type of kids, and there's a lot of them around the country and more all the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Could you answer that? What are the options, as you are aware of, for somebody with a kid that they need some help? Maybe residential like yourself, or maybe just some counseling.
Right. Well, certainly counseling is, you know, anybody who can benefit from a good partner in, you know, kind of getting through the vagaries of life here. But it is, you know, for a transition program, I mean, there are lots of them all over the place, and some of them are, you know, community-based like ours are. Some of them are on school campuses. There's more and more of them all the time, and partly because there's so many people who are looking for the programming. But part of what the predicament is very, most of the transition programming is not funded. And so, you know, people finish with the high school, and those are mandated services, and then after you know, your public education is finished, there's no more mandates for people. So it's not necessarily, you know, there's some public funding if people qualify, and in different states there's in Connecticut it's the Department of Developmental Services, or it's funding through acquired brain injury, or it's the Department of Mental Health, or it's, you know, some other agencies that provide funding. But one of the most difficult things is this population isn't well funded for the education that they need after high school, and the mandate stops. And that's one of the most challenging things for families is the mandate stop, and also the holistic nature of the educational opportunity stops. And so what you have is you have to hunt around for either a program or individual services that are going to help you put together some components that's going to help your son or daughter move to adult life. And, you know, that's housing, and it's friends, and it's educational opportunities, and it's work, and it's, you know, all those things that kind of have to be cobbled together after high school is over. But there's lots and lots of transition programs. Almost anybody who goes, you know, onto the internet and looks for transition programs can find them all over the country.
There's a lot of them too that I work with. Now, these are in the parent choice, and so the parents take care of the tuition, and that's of course impossible or very difficult for most parents. But there's a lot of those. I had a guest on last week that has a school. It's basically an academy, an accredited school, working with kids on level one of the autism spectrum. And they work with them, and they do a lot of the same things you're talking about, but they also can provide a diploma and work on the academics and some pretty challenging college prep academics. There's a lot of possibilities. Somebody has a need. I think what we're both saying is there's a lot of options there that they can find.
Yeah. One of the things is that, you know, most of the schools are will provide services up to the age of 21 for, you know, somebody who is designated as somebody with special needs and has an IEP. And so often what happens is that there's a requirement for a transition plan while you're in high school, and it's for families to be really vigilant about that transition plan and start to, while they're still in high school, we get many people that are supported by their school systems in that 18 to 21, that window of 18 to 21, while the school system is still responsible, and yet the schools can't meet their needs for the transition services. And so it's being really mindful of, you know, being really vigilant, you know, starting at about age 14 and 15 about, you know, what is the school system doing about teaching somebody how to use, public transportation, or take a pan out of the oven, or, you know, organize not to follow their schedule, or make decisions about whether they're sick or you need medical care, or manage their money, or make decisions about friends they would be compatible with, or say yes or no. I mean, there's so many things that families can be bringing earlier into that PPT process in the transition years, because they have to provide the transition services to individuals with special needs while they're still in school. They can.
Okay, I have another question to go on and keep it moving along. It's interesting, and I think you already really answered it, with the changes some people go through, and of course that's going to be a transition, going to be a big change. How do you know if you've covered everything one may need to know? I think you've already answered it.
Well, I suppose what you do is you think about what are the things that you need to be able to do, and does your son or daughter know how to be able to do it? Are they going to be able to live independently? Are they going to be able to get around? Are they going to be able to hold a job? Are they going to be able to write a check? Are they going to be able to feed themselves? Are they going to be able to take their medications? Are they going to? It's all those things that families do for their children, and really assessing whether that person can do them on their own.
It comes down to a watch, observe, and listen.
Yeah,
sure. And if there's a deficit, if something isn't doing quite right, well, listen, figure out what the problem is.
Right. There's so many families, just because the need to make families work, that just do things for their son or daughter because, I mean, that's what it is. They're busy and they got to make things work, and so they might pack their lunch, or they might not ask them to cook one meal, or they might still wash their hair, or they might do all those things. And so it's really starting to look at what you do for that child. And start to think about ways to be, more of a trainer and less of a doer.
I think you said that you were not a live-in program, but not residential.
No, we
right?
are a residential program. So it's like, at our program, it's like coming to Life Skills College. So what you do is that it's much that experience of moving away from home. And then, again, it's that, you know, that learning through living it. So all of a sudden, you know, mom and dad aren't the ones that are there. They're making sure you have your lunch packed, or make sure that your clothes are washed, or making sure, you know, that you're busy every second. Or, you know, here's a classic one, is that most young people will come to their parents and say, I'm bored. And most parents will say, oh, why don't you, or here, I'm going to help you do this, or why, you know, the child hands them this and they take it, versus, you know, we call it giving it back to them in a loving way and say something like, oh, I hate to be bored. What do you think you could do when you're bored? And give it back to them so that they start to build some expectation that they're responsible and they can learn things and not just have families just do for them all the time. And it's part of being a parent. You know,
Well, I think with helicopter parents around, I think that's maybe, and I keep hearing, maybe it's becoming a lost art, this turning it back to, because so many parents seem to feel like if a kid has a problem, they take it, that's not good for them.
Well, it isn't, and, you know, one of the most important things we help parents absolutely understand is how is it to tolerate their child's discomfort, because, you know, there's piles of things I wouldn't have learned if I wasn't uncomfortable. You know, they have to want to learn it and realize that it's their responsibility. And that means, you know, if they're not getting along with their roommate, and they're calling the parents for the parents to say, well, that's your roommate. I guess you got to figure out how to do that. Who can you help? Who can you find there to help you be able to figure out that problem?
Okay, here's a question. Here's a question that is a little bit different, and I'm interested how you'd answer it. How do you cover issues concerning adult nature subject or adult mature, like, for instance, the proper time and place for adult stuff? How would you deal with that? Because these kids are getting onto adult, and that's part of what they're going to meet.
Absolutely. So what we're doing a lot of, a sexuality training. We're doing a lot of, information about, what about relationships and what about sexuality and what about birth control and what about all the things and what, and so it is helping people understand kind of all the, what's the facts, what's the repercussions around things? How do you know who's somebody who you would be compatible with? What is it? What are the repercussions to, when is it time to, how long should you know somebody before you're having a relationship? All those things. So if somebody needs to have private time, we need to help them build in private time. So it's private time. So here's what you need to plan. One of the things that parents ask us about a lot is, what are you going to do about all those relationships between each other?
And okay, I got to interrupt on this to continue the program on, and we're going to take a 1 minute break for an important message, and be right back. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, talking with Linda Rogan, who's the Director of Programs and Services at Vista Vocational and Life Skills Center in Connecticut.
Saving Teens in Crisis Collaborative is a nonprofit organization that was formed in April of 2004 when parents of struggling teens realized that the help they were able to access for their child would prove to be prohibitively expensive for other struggling families. Saving Teens' mission is to assist troubled teens and their families struggling with substance abuse and other emotional issues. We work with the therapeutic program industry to fund and support families with financial limitations as they complete the comprehensive program that they desperately need but may not be able to afford. In partnership with programs, educational consultants, and the family, Saving Teens establishes a payment plan for services that include scholarship, family contribution, and Saving Teens funds. Our goal is to provide a total solution to troubled teens and their families with a methodology that incorporates financial and emotional support throughout a 12 to 24 month process of evaluation, intervention, and education. To donate or to get more information, please visit us at our website, www.savingteens.org. Thank you.
Okay, this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, talking with Linda Rogan, and that was a public service announcement by Saving Teens. And the question we were talking about is, and some of the people are asking, is program online for these things and private funding. They help parents that need residential programs, they have a problem with the funding. So that was the Saving Teens. And then how do you know where to look for things? I would suggest my own website. We have a large amount of information, a large amount of programs, mostly residential, that work with all kinds of special needs kids. That's strugglingteens, that's one word, .com. Okay, so Linda, how can parents, let's talk about how parents specifically can help their child meet this translation. Say you have a high school kid, they're a special needs kid, and they're maybe getting some help through the school. What can parents do? What do parents need to do to help their child?
Okay. Well, one of the things I think that that I was saying before is that they should start really early in terms of the school, in terms of the transition, the expectations of what the school needs to be doing in terms of helping people in terms of transition early on, and make sure that they are they're just being really strong advocates of making sure that part's not being overlooked, because it's really, really important, and maybe asking for assessments and making sure people have experiences, and also that it is, it's important for them to start looking and maybe challenging themselves a little bit to have expectations for their son or daughter to be able to start to do some things that are holding more responsibility when they're still at high school. And then it is looking for all the ways that people can find for social opportunities that they can find in their town. But one of the things that I think is really important is that it's a lot of really allowing yourself to develop a new relationship with a child who is now on the road to adulthood. And it's a relationship that's built less on dependency and more on the kind of the unique identities of each person. And so what happens is it's kind of like many emerging adults, like have a pretty good ability to follow parental direction, but no idea how to organize their life. Like they know to put on a clean shirt for work, but they don't know how to wash it or plan ahead and make sure that they have enough shirts or laundry detergent to maintain clean clothes. And so parents have routines, and sometimes it can be really helpful to start to think about what those routines are and allow and support the individual taking ownership and problem solving and then moving towards some independence. So some of it's kind of changing some of their habits, you know, instead of advocating so much, like, or need to teach kind of the thinking and doing skills, kind of being a coach rather than solving the problems. And one of the most important things is that, starting not to rescue or fix or expect other people to rescue and fix. I don't know if that's something in terms of when we were talking about the, parents who are, they just don't want the child to have any more discomfort, than they already have, and they want things not to be difficult for them. And so they work really hard to fix the problem. But it is, what happens is, we all use our experiences of success or failure, to make our next decision. And so what happens is people need to think and use their experiences, and we need to let them have those experiences. So if we're constantly rescuing our children, we're giving them the message that they're not capable. And
okay, another question. Mm-hmm. These are things that should be taught to all people. Do you feel the school systems cover basic life for any child these days? What do you find in the kids that show up and you work with? Have they been prepared or what do you think of the school system? Are they doing the proper, adequate job in general?
Well, the school system, what's happened with the school system is their job mostly is working on the academics. They generally don't do a very good job of being able to move individuals in terms of these transition things and, teach them how to ride the public bus and get them to be able to work not just in a spot that they put them in that happens to be their, kind of an experience, kind of a work thing, but really being able to have them be able to have experiences. And the schools, just partly by the nature of the fact that they're not there for the med-taking or the money management or all those other kinds of things. They generally don't do a very good job of it. And so that's why families so much have to say, here's the things for transition that my son or daughter needs to learn, and they need to have an opportunity to learn it. So it isn't by want of the school not caring about it. It has to do with the nature of they don't have the individuals in the hours out of kind of the academic time very much, maybe until the very end, but they're still on the school campus. And so it's hard for the schools to be able to do that. And that's why I think families need to be really mindful with the schools about the transitional, the things that they need to be able to do, and that families need to support it. I'm not sure whether I got off on the wrong question there, Lon, did I?
No, I think that sort of addresses it. I have another question that's coming from the chat. Do you feel helicopter parenting is a good thing or a bad thing?
I think parents being part of a team is a wonderful thing. I think what we know of as helicopter parenting, which is like taking responsibility for or making sure, my brother works on a college campus, and they've had to set up like a whole formal ceremony to have the parents leave, and they can't be on campus, you know, when after their sons or daughters start school. And so the helicoptering, which is, you know, caring and paying attention and teaming is fabulous. Taking responsibility for or doing it for them is not very helpful.
Yeah, and that's that's what I generally gather in the helicopter parenting is that do it for them. I think that was a good definition, is that helicopter parenting is when you take responsibility for what the child should be doing.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that they've shown is one of the most important character traits that somebody can develop for success and happiness is resilience. And you know, you get that by using your experiences, both comfortable and uncomfortable, to move ahead. And resilience is just, I mean, they've, you know, the studies have just shown probably one of the most important things for success and happiness is resilience. And I think that's what that typical helicopter parenting robs kids of the opportunity to be resilient. And,
okay, let's go on to another question, and a sort of interesting, how can graduating from school and leaving home, which is the gold of any kid, and the special needs, and specifically in this transition, how can it feel so good while also feeling so bad? There's mixed feelings there. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, we have families who are, I mean, when they come. And we have a new family orientation and a workshop that I call Letting Go. And just when you just ask parents, what are you feeling right now? I mean, it ranges from joy and pride to despair and fear and panic. And they really use the expression of my job just walked out the door. And when it comes down to it and you really hear what is happening, is that there can often be a tremendous intimacy that families with parents will develop, particularly with a child who is special needs. There's been more dependency, there's been more intimacy, and what they, you know, we love intimacy with our kids. And what they're worried about and what the panic is about is that they're going to lose that intimacy. And as this child becomes an adult, they're going to kind of lose that. And what they've got to be reassured is that you can have intimacy without dependence. And so to allow this person to grow up and to be an adult on their own without being so dependent on their parents is something that their parents can start to kind of integrate and be able to not be so, they're scared. Are they gonna get hurt? Are they gonna be able to do this? But part of it is, are they gonna need me anymore?
Well, let's follow that through to the parent-child relationship and as it goes through the transition, because that's very important. But the parent-child relationship, how does it change with the child's independence? So sort of take it through, how should a parent-child be relating when they're a dependent teenager, and how should they relate or kind of relationship should they have when the child has made that transition as an adult, and what do they need to go through?
Yeah,
that's an open-ended question.
Yeah. Well, part of that is really kind of understanding that the flip side of really all that caring and concern and loving, the flip side of the message to that child is you're frail, you're vulnerable, you're needy. And so when they kind of understand that more, then they're just starting to be a little more aware of it. That's really very helpful. I mean, when we had a family and when their daughter was going to be coming, and I said, so, you know, let's pick a starting date. And the father said, oh, let's pick the very last possible date we could possibly come. Let's pick, you know, after Labor Day. And I said, we can pick whatever date that works, but I'm going to ask you to do something first. I'm going to ask you to ask her when she would like to start. And because we've been talking about it, he was much more willing to say, oh, I hadn't even thought about asking her. But yes, I'll ask her. And of course, what she said was, I want to start the very first day I can possibly start. And kind of that started that, oh, wait a minute. I have to, like, I'm the one. It's my sadness about having her go away earlier. And here she is. She wants to go. I have to listen to her. So it's starting to really see that their wants and their sadness and their all that stuff is not what's paramount and start to really enjoy that child for the individual that they're becoming. And, you know, it's moving out. You know, what they do, what all families, all we all do is try to get our child to be more capable and happier and more, you know, safer and all those things. And we just work so hard at kind of fixing them. And there comes a point where you're not working so hard to fix them, you're enjoying them. And you just kind of, and we see that with the family. So it's not all based on kind of, you know, getting them to, you know, look right and act right and do all that stuff, but just to be able to enjoy them, because some of what happens is they can see how much we can enjoy them. And they see the growth and the maturity, and as the individual kind of starts to have their own world and life and friends, that they go, oh, wait a minute, like this is wonderful. And it comes back, you know, they still with, you know, they're they didn't get the haircut when their parents would have wanted them to, you know, that stuff kind of comes back. And then it's, you know, helping that child be able to say, no, I'm letting my hair go longer. I'm not getting the haircut you want. I'm getting the haircut I want. And starting to be able to have them have those kinds of conversations. And again, some of that comes from just starting to understand what they need to do to help that process, because children with special needs just won't be as articulate about it as our kids without special needs. I mean, our kids without special needs will, you know, let things go in one ear and out the other. And these kids are just a little more dependent, and so parents have to be more, kind of play more of an active role in really supporting their individuation.
Okay, well, we have about 5 minutes, actually 4 minutes left to go. And I want to give you a chance to talk about, because there have been several questions about your program, the Vista Vocational and Life Skills Center. So I'll give you a few minutes. I guess you could call it a commercial break, but to talk about Vista and what it is, who they work with, how are people selected for it, you know, your screening process, and as much as you can get in about 4 minutes.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much. So this is really a program. We're providing services and training to help individuals with autism and other neurologically based disabilities transition from high school settings into successful and independent adulthood. We provide services that also can continue this process throughout the lifetime of these adults as they age and their needs evolve. And that's one of the most, you know, wonderful things about VISTA, is that it isn't a short-term school program and then people leave and then have to transition again into another.
What's the average length of time? That was one of the questions.
Well, I've been here for, in our what we call our entrance program, which is the part that's much more like Life Skills College, which is just a tuition-based program that people come to, like Life Skills College. That's a 2 to 3 year program, and very individualized and very based on people's needs. But then we have a long-term program. So when people graduate from that Life Skills College part, is that we call it outreach, and they move into housing in the community and receive support services at whatever level they need it. And we have just a tremendous community within the larger community that they're a part of. We have people, we've been here 25 years. We have people that have been here 25 years.
And okay, so we've got about 1 minute left, and I want you to give the contact information. If they want to find out, either contact you or find out more about VISTA, how would they, where would they go?
So our website is www.vistavocational.org. And if you go into our website, it would give you the way to get into somebody about admissions or somebody, it'll give you all the information. So that's probably the best way. If anybody wants to just call directly to me, that would be fine. And my name is Linda Rogan. And the number, VISTA, is 860-399-8080. We'd be happy to talk to anyone. We do have admission process, because we want to make sure we're right for the individual, and they need to feel we're right for them.
Okay, and we have to shut it off, Linda. They're counting down for me. This is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report, and we've been talking with Linda Rogan from Special Needs to Independent Living, the transition for special needs kids. And part of that was how they do it at Vista Vocational and Life Skills Center in Connecticut. And Linda, thank you very much. We really enjoyed having you.
Thank you, Lon.
And this is Lon Woodbury with the Woodbury Report. I'm located in North Idaho, and I'm here on K4HD every Tuesday. Be sure to see you next week.